crying in the workforce is a feminist act. My hope is that if somebody needs to cry in front of me, they know that I'm gonna meet them where they're at and have like space in my heart and day for them.
Welcome. This is More Right Than Wrong, the podcast where we discuss the contradictions of being a woman in the modern workplace. I'm Angie Lee.
And I'm Rachel Yu. We're two creative souls who've built successful professional careers by navigating what we're calling modern workplace tensions.
Right. So whether it's being bold and visionary, yet a humble listener, while being both gut-driven and data-driven, or perhaps even my favorite, which is planning for everything that could possibly go wrong while failing fast, it can be tough with the mental gymnastics to follow your passion while also setting careful boundaries. So today we're going to be exploring the tension between leading with authority and vulnerability. How do you drive a team for results while building human connections? How do you share parts of yourself without oversharing?
So we invited Audra Pace, a multidisciplinary creative director and brand strategist, to talk to her about this very topic. Audra and I met many years ago when I was a creative director at an agency, and we hired her as a freelance copywriter because at the time she was rebooting her career and doing copywriting as sort of a side hustle. Her energy just blew me away. It was super contagious. In the spring of 2021, when we taped this conversation, Audra was working at Thrillist. We loved hearing about how she empathetically adjusted her leadership style to bring out the best in her team during a challenging and pretty emotional time for a lot of people. Audra is a great example of a leader who balances both showing up for her team while also pushing them to deliver. We're excited to share our conversation.
Let's get to it. Audra, it's so great to have you here. Why don't you start by describing what it is you do at Thrillist? Let's talk about the scope and the scale of your responsibilities.
It's always growing. So as creative director at Thrillist, the role is basically overseeing anything that is art, design, and creative concept as it relates to what you see on the site. And then any sort of like little digital experiences that we create, as well as the art direction and production design of any of our video content. So that goes, you know, all the way through to set design, graphic package design, that kind of stuff. And then events and experiences is kind of the last, you know, outside tier as well. It's pretty broad. I'm obviously not working on this stuff alone, but I would say if there's anything that is to do with like how Thrillist looks and shows up aesthetically, that goes through me.
Incredible.
Wow. That's a really broad set of responsibilities.
Yeah, that sounded bigger than it. I'm suddenly intimidated by what I have to do on Monday.
And it's interesting because Rachel introduced you as a copywriter. So can you talk a little bit about your journey of going from a copywriter to now overseeing the entire visual and expression of Thrillist?
Yeah, that's weird, huh? So I definitely took a weird path into creative direction. In some ways, it's very traditional that a copywriter ends up being a creative director.
Totally.
That's true of a lot of ad agencies. So I started writing copy. Then I was doing a lot of scripting, a good bit of scripting for, you know, commercials or video content or whatever. I ended up wanting to direct some of those videos because really you end up, when you are doing the writing and you're like sort of the lead writer on it, or even at the ACD level, you're doing the casting, you're working with the client, you're really envisioning every piece of this, usually working quite closely with art directors. And then, you know, this thing kind of kept happening where, you know, at the last minute, some usually, you know, 50 plus year old white guy would get brought on the day of the shoot, get paid $20,000, you know, to direct, and I'm putting that in quotes. And often, you know, that person walks away with like a director credit and a path to going to Cannes in a few months, right? And I found myself getting kind of fed up with that. So I ended up talking to, you know, smaller agencies and said, I really want to learn to direct. And somebody took a chance on me and kind of helped me learn how to do that. And so then I started doing a little bit more of this visual direction and physical art direction, you know, as it related to scene and set styling and things like that. And then started working on bigger brand identity. So the role, like the creative director role, honestly, especially in small shops, like you need to learn to be pretty nimble. Over time, I really got to learn, you know, graphic design really quite well, and then was able to translate those skills over. But yeah, it's funny to think I started as a writer and moved into like a very visual role, but I think it is all storytelling. It's just swapping out the medium, basically, but you're still kind of doing the same thing, whether you're doing it with color or a film or, you know, a painting or
for sure
dance or whatever.
It's all forms of communication and messaging.
Yeah.
Well, so today we're talking about the paradox of authority and vulnerability. And you and I have had some interesting previous conversations about it. And it was fun because you're quite on fire about the topic. So I don't know. I think it would be an interesting place to start just to hear you talk about how you might define when you hear those terms in the workplace, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah. I mean, so vulnerability as it relates to workplace. And I think what it means when you are in position of authority, like vulnerable leadership, right? That phrase is, I think, being able to approach, and I'm saying this without having sort of the Harvard Business Review definition in front of me or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think it's being able to lead like heart first, empathy first, right? Looking at your colleagues as people and individuals who you share a common goal with. So like one part of it is how you show up for others and look at others. I think the other part of being vulnerable as a leader in a good way, in a positive way, is also being able to look at yourself and being able to own your strengths and use them, wield them for good, accept your weaknesses and work on them, be maybe open about some of that stuff and not necessarily need to reflexively be defensive or hide it. I also think it's very much about meeting people where they are rather than as a leader demanding that they come to you and meet you where you are and do things your exact way. And I mean that in terms of like being able to flex your social style, right? To adapt to another style of person, right? And work with them. And that you as a leader should do that a little bit just because that might teach them to do that for you a little bit too, right? So I think that vulnerability kind of also teaches the people below you how to better communicate and grow themselves as well. It's almost leading by example in some ways.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've found also being a creative director and working with strategists and copywriters, but significantly working with a lot of visual artists. I just had a conversation actually earlier today with a designer developer, and he was sharing a story about how he was working for a VP of marketing, and it was quite challenging because no vulnerability was happening on both sides. And the leader really has to set the tone for that because you can't really do that as you're like reporting to somebody. But there was definitely some like challenges in personality and communication. And it bummed me out to hear about it because what I heard you talk about was almost like, it's trivializing it to some degree, but it was a combination of like empathy and transparency with like peppered in with a little bit of like self-reflection and self-awareness. All of that manifests and really demonstrates itself in communication. Like you have to communicate about those things. I think it can be really challenging, at least for me on a personal level, to know what's the line of vulnerability. Like when are you being too vulnerable? how do you navigate that?
That is something that I really, really wrestle with is like, how do you still be sensitive and be really strong?
Right.
And I think we're at this very strange place where like for the longest time, success was like admit zero weakness, basically deny any accountability where you were maybe like in the wrong or caught in a lie. And that's like what would make up a great leader. And I think that model obviously is failing. You know, people are mass exiting business situations where they're dealing with toxic leadership. Like they're just pretty much like not gonna have it, right? They're realizing it's not worth it. And our goal now is to like reshape that and say, okay, what does a new format of strength look like that isn't just you crumbling or saying yes to every demand that comes your way, you know, or acquiescing to every thought that every other person has or whatever? How can you still be yourself and be confident in your strengths, your decisions, and your vision, you know, often, but also really allow room and space for everyone else around you to grow and come up with you, float, like, you know, float all boats.
So you made a comment earlier about like actively choosing to acquire a new skill, which meant you were acknowledging the need to grow and that you wanted other people's help to do that.
But at the same time, though, you're bringing with you the experience that you had previously. Can you talk a little bit about how the mix of strength and vulnerability changes as you've progressed in your career?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. Actually, as I've gotten further in my career, I've become a lot more confident in saying what I'm not really an expert in. And honestly, I'm hiring people who can do what I can't do. I want that, right? Like I want to bring in other strengths and abilities to like support a more holistic goal. And I don't need to be an expert in every single one of those things. I think there was sort of a midpoint in the career when I was kind of trying to level up where that was pretty scary and hard to do. Still to this day, like saying creative director, but not really being having a graphic design background, there's like kind of this like, so what do you do? And it's like, well, you know what? I know my staff knows I can do things that they can't do. And that's why they've stayed, right? Like that's why they still work here. And they can do things that I probably wouldn't come up with. And I can like own that now. To me, it took realizing like, hey, I've got a vision skill set that other people don't have. I have an adaptability skill set that other people don't have. I've got, you know, the ability to like find and nurture talent. So I know that like the thing that I'm able to bring to the table is very, very, very valuable. And I don't need to be the world's best, like, you know, person inside of Illustrator ever to be really good. And I know, you know what, when it is time to have somebody, you know, one of those designers who wants to maybe start to learn how to art direct an actual, a photo shoot or a video shoot, and really wants to figure out prop styling, like I can step in with 100% confidence and be like, here, let me open this door for you because this is what I know really well.
I think part of the paradigm shift that we've talked about, strength and vulnerability, is it really like, you know, you get your 360 performance review. It's like, what are your strengths or what are your opportunities or weaknesses? To me, it colloquially, the way that's applied is less about what's your area of weakness, but more, can you confidently and comfortably be honest about what you don't know or what's difficult? It's interesting because there is this question of like, does the amount of how much you can be transparent, should that change in some way proportional to the stage of your career? I would much rather have a designer or developer come to me and say like, I'm struggling with this thing. I need help solving it, rather than like putting up a front. Because I think it actually takes a lot of courage and bravery to be able to say, I know I'm a good designer, but I don't have every answer.
Yeah.
Hearing us talk about this topic, I am realizing more and more that I interpreted this more, what you're describing to me is more of what creating an environment of psychological safety where people could admit, like, I want help doing something versus when I hear of authority versus kind of vulnerability in the perspective of being a leader, I often think about the mantra that, you know, jokingly is applied over and over and over again in business school, which is like, fake it till you make it. And to some degree, when you're younger, you kind of have to fake it because, like, you haven't made anything. And so yeah, this is where, anything. Like, I think one thing that I was reflecting upon recently was I was sharing with a friend over lunch. I was like, you know, I actually feel more comfortable being who I am and letting others in because people can look at my past experiences and say, well, Angie deserves a seat at the table. Look at all these things that she's done. And so therefore, I can then feel safer admitting and acknowledging and bringing others in a lot of ways versus where it felt before I needed to be more protective.
I'm pretty like radically trans with my team, at least I know myself to be pretty radically transparent. Like I definitely have told them things that would, you know, maybe be like considered not inappropriate or anything. I don't mean like that, but like, I'll usually go out on a limb because it, to me, being personal and honest is important.
Will you share an example?
Like conversation around whether or not we're going to go back into the office, right? Mm. And so like, I'm okay with being a little bit wrong rather than saying nothing until there is a full formalized plan. I'm more comfortable saying, we don't have a fully formalized plan yet. Here's the conversation as it's happening. When a project is going off the rails, I will pretty clearly say this project is going off the rails. It needs to be handled. Here's what's going wrong. I'm not Pollyanna-ish. I'm very, very direct. So that's a personal style of mine. Mm-hmm. I don't gatekeep in terms of what I think certain you know, levels should know or be privy to or understand. I really think it should all be out there. I think it should matter to the junior most person on the team. For example, when you're dealing with like a client situation, if it's going really badly, they should know. They should know if it's going really well, because that's information. Like that's what they learn from. And that's worked more in my benefit than not. I can't say I'm 100 out of 100 for that one. I've definitely, you know, said the wrong thing at the wrong time before. I'm a Gemini and just pretty famous for that in general. But like,
well, let's swing to the other way, because you're talking about radical transparency. Yeah. Let's talk about crying. Because I actually think about, I cry all the time, especially depending on like what's going on hormonally with me. And part of me is like, as long as you can get the words out, they can hear you. How do we feel about crying?
Crying in the workforce is a feminist act. I'm like so fine with crying. Depending, I mean, whatever. There's obviously situations where it's not fine. But if you're an emotional person or you're going through something where you're feeling really emotional, you know, you should be able to express that within reason, especially when it's something related to work. Like, I'm so frustrated with this project that I am going to cry. Like, I don't think it's something you have to hide completely. Mm. I think you've got to understand that when you cry, it is something that everybody has a different relationship to crying. So that might be really rough on somebody else if they see you cry, right? Like, that might be tough for them. You know, I definitely have, like at one point we were really, really slammed with a few of these events that we did this year. And I was just way overwhelmed. It was like in a Zoom meeting with 30 people and I put my head down and they like asked me a question. And I was like, I literally looked up and said, should I turn my camera off? Cause I'm going to cry. Aww. I was like, it's not cause I can't answer, but like, I was literally like, I need a minute. Like,
and what was behind that? What was the emotion behind that? Just feeling overwhelmed.
Oh, overwhelmed. I think for a lot of people, crying is, I mean, emotionally, it is like an automatic response to being overwhelmed or frustrated. That's pretty common that's what happens to folks. So they just like you short circuit and you like, you know, like when I'm deeply sad, crying isn't usually the first thing that happens.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's exactly, you and I are exactly the same. Like when I cry, it's like literally because I'm so frustrated. I will say, these are not tears of sadness. I am incredibly angry and frustrated. So don't think you're off the hook.
Yeah. I need to let this out of my face because I don't want to scream.
Yes.
Because you write screaming 100%. In anger is, so to me, like if I have to make a choice emotionally between screaming in anger or crying, I will choose crying because that is definitely way less threatening and terrifying.
You know, you kind of mentioned before, like within reason, you kind of said, you caveated everything. You're like within reason. What is the criteria? What's the line between vulnerability, transparency, and just being like your emotional self and then just going too far?
And like, what are the objectives too, right? Is it like a professional environment? Is it a productive environment? Is it an environment of trust? Like what's even driving that discretion?
That's what I mean. I mean, there are obviously times where it would not be very okay to cry, like fully, right? There just are scenarios in which it's much more strange, less socially acceptable. You're not in a comfortable environment, right? Like, so there are definitely times where like you might really want to cry, but you might have to hold it in. My hope is that if somebody needs to cry in front of me, they know that I'm going to meet them where they're at and have like space in my heart and day for them. I think if you're somebody who cries every time you talk to someone, you might have to answer some questions for yourself. Like, why is that response happening so much? So that's why I say like within reason. It doesn't mean crying within reason, but obviously, you know, it's not the time to fully unpack every single thing that's going on in your life every time you're in a business scenario. But to me, there should be room for you to express yourself, whatever that is for you. That should be like a normalized, comfortable thing. And I try to make it that way for my team. I think it is. Like our CEO has totally wept before when getting really like sincere about things. So I think generally throughout the Group 9 organization, like we're on board with showing emotion.
It's like a top down. Yeah. Cause it usually is a culture set by top down. I mean, speaking of authority, how do you think it affects people's interpretation of authority when you act that way? Does it compromise it?
I mean, I think we're in a place now. I feel at least that I work in a place where that humanizes me to others. Certainly when I see that coming out of leadership above me, that humanizes them to me. Doesn't really signify weakness. If anything, it signifies that there's some EQ going on there. So I think that the tide is changing that way. The other reason why I think it's important is because, like, just straight up, like, especially in this environment that we are in right now where things are changing really radically, you will fuck up as a leader.
Totally.
Like, you will fail. Like, you just will. It's not an if, it is a when. And how you fail is any number of ways, but it's going to happen. And if you've established yourself as a person that is, like, not this pillar, like a pillar of stone, but as a person who is fallible, it's going to be a lot easier for people to forgive you, for people to extend a hand. Your fall from grace is going to be a lot shorter of a fall.
And you also made a comment earlier about how you are really talented bringing out the good in people. And I think it's widely known that folks don't leave companies, they leave bosses, right? And they also do their best work for the bosses that they trust, that they respect, they like. And to some degree, I would argue that the world has gone in a direction where one has to be human in order to make those connections, because you're not just taking in widgets and then, you know, and putting them into a machine and then putting out like a larger widget. You're doing something that requires creative effort amongst a large number of people.
Well, and I think too, I mean, to state the obvious, COVID was a catalyst for a lot of this, right? Because now your dog is running into the frame, your baby's crying, or like kids are walking, like there's that wall of like, I'm going to keep this hyper-professional and you don't know anything about me personally, was completely dropped. Like, people couldn't hold that front anymore. And so I think COVID has been a blessing in that regard, because people could say, like, I'm really tired. I didn't get much sleep last night. My baby was crying all night long. And you can be vulnerable in that regard. And just a couple quick thoughts. What you guys have been talking about have made me think of cultures that people have been talking about a lot. Angie, you mentioned psychological safety. Also, a lot of cultures, especially tech companies, want to create cultures of embracing risk, like, and growth mindset, right? All of those things. Vulnerability is an essential component that
absolutely.
It's the fertilizer
that
helps these kinds of cultures grow.
I think it's so interesting that you latched on to the fact that, yes, everyone's reality is around them and you see the person. I also think that this remote lifestyle, I think it was quite damaging because it brought so much of our lives online. So your ability to read somebody's energy, have small, trivial interactions like your hair looks fabulous today, or, you know, that coffee smells great. Like, just the little 2-second interactions, okay, that you have with people that endear you to one another have been taken away from us, completely taken away from us. And so to me, it is more important than ever to be able to ask for feedback, open yourself up to other people, work a little extra hard to keep connections, not take any interaction for granted. And to me, like, that is all part of what real authority is.
Yeah.
It actually means much greater responsibility, because I think this has actually done a real doozy on our ability to connect with one another in a negative way. And I think it's in part responsible for why people are so on edge, why we're going through some of these really, really difficult conversations that I think needed to happen no matter what. But time in isolation and opportunity for miscommunications and misfirings is, like, definitely a huge catalyst here. So I think that, like, piece of it opens you up for greater vulnerability in general as a person, and you've got to learn to, like, work with it.
So what advice do you have for people who are trying to navigate this mix between being strong, you know, faking it till you make it, and being more vulnerable and open and transparent?
So I really do think they are two wings of the same bird, kind of a thing. Like, they are one and the same. I believe that faking it till you make it, like, again, that's a risk-taking personality. That's a risk-taking behavior, right? So you have to have vulnerability to successfully take risks. So I think that is the kind of the thing to keep in mind for folks that are working on growing their careers and growing their trajectory, is if you can open yourself up to being vulnerable and like open yourself up a little bit more to accepting where you're going to need to learn and sort of working on those opportunities, that is going to enable you to continue taking greater and greater risks. And like, so that is the part that sits under faking it so that you can make it, right? Vulnerability is the pad under faking it that gets you to the making it part.
Love that. That's really cool. I've never thought of it that way. It also makes me think we need to have a fake it versus making it episode, Angie, because I'm like, why is it even called faking it? I have so many questions about that. But
yeah, it isn't faking it, just learning.
Like, yeah, I feel like, isn't it like stepping up to the challenge? Like, why are we using the word faking? But anyway, okay, that was a really cool way to think about it. I love it. So final question, would love to hear, in the realm of vulnerability and declaring authority, all of that, what do you think you have gotten more right overall than wrong?
I think the radical transparency thing has gone more right than wrong. That's actually the exact phrase that I would think of when I think of that, because it definitely has gone wrong plenty of times, but it has totally gone more right than wrong, I would say. I think the other thing is willingness to try new things, things that I'm not expert at, and encouraging others to do the same. Please try to do something new, even if it hurts a little bit or feels uncomfortable, even if you feel like you might not nail it, just try it. I think, again, has sometimes gone spectacularly wrong. Definitely, I'm not 10 out of 10 for anything, but has pretty much gone more right, because I ended up in this like cool job where we're building like enormous physical installations, where we're doing set design, but we're also doing websites. We're, you know, turning a bro brand. I'm doing quote unquotes, but you know, a bro brand that was a men focused publication for what to do, into, you know, a really holistic approach to examining our culture and our identity through food, drink, travel, and entertainment. Right. So that willingness to try new things and just push on it, even if it doesn't totally feel comfortable, I think that is a more right than wrong.
It's funny. I just want to add, I'm reading Mel Robbins, one of her older books called The 5 Second Rule. And she says that it kind of makes me think of what you just said, where she says, success is a numbers game. You're not going to win it if you keep telling yourself to wait. The more often you choose courage, the more likely you'll succeed.
I mean, she said that way better than me.
Oh my God, that was so great. It really makes me want to grab a drink with Audra and get to know her more and like just pick her brain more. And just, I feel like I could learn so much from her experiences. What did you take away from it?
Well, first of all, she's always so fun to chat with. I loved it. But she coined this phrase that's echoing in my head, and I need to get it like printed on a sweatshirt, but crying is a feminist act. Like, talk about a liberating phrase. I mean, as a person that cries very often, it's like, I mean, I cry when I'm overwhelmed, I cry when I'm moved, I cry when I'm happy, I cry when I'm tired, I cry, like, it's just such a release for me. And, you know, it's interesting because in society, like, our initial instinct is to apologize as soon as tears come, you know, like, oh, I'm sorry, like, as soon as you feel them coming on, especially in the workplace. And I just love that she's saying, like, no, don't apologize for those tears.
I agree.
It definitely made me think about, I mean, I recently, we had a hero holiday party and celebration. We were celebrating our 1 year birthday, and we had the privilege of clients giving toasts to us. And one happened to be my best friend from childhood, also client. And he just like floored me with what he said, moved me to tears before I, right after him, I was giving my toast. And I was like,
so
oh
nice.
Shit. Well, I was pissed because I was like, I had my shit together and I had all these notes and now I'm like crying and I felt like
that you like got mad at him for saying nice things to you.
But yeah, and I was just, here I was crying to like, you know, 20 people over Zoom where you can see real close up. And yeah, I just embraced it and just
that's like, awesome.
And just said, yeah, that was very moving. Thank you. And it's an art form, I guess, to do it with grace.
That's so true. That's so true. what I took away was I love the idea that there's like an old school mode of thinking that authority comes from position power. But actually, when you think about how you can actually gain authority by building up trust, building up transparency, being honest, it actually does a really nice job of balancing and kind of bridging between authority and vulnerability, right? And right. Setting that mode of vulnerability for your employees, your juniors, for showing them that one can have both a strong point of view and be someone you can look up to, but also invite others in was a really powerful moment. So I really liked that.
Yeah, it almost becomes like a currency of earning trust and respect.
Agreed.
Very cool. Well, we're so thankful. Thank you so much, Audra, for taking the time to have this conversation with us and even more so being so vulnerable with us.
And thanks to everyone for listening. If you want to get in touch with us or talk more about the episode, hit us up on social. And of course, subscribe to More Right Than Wrong if you haven't already. And if you're so inclined, if you could leave us a cute review, we certainly won't be upset. Thanks so much.
Cute comments only.